Now, broadcasting on Radio Star Worldwide, it's time for Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Let's tap into your own authentic genius and live the life you desire. Join Dr. Rademacher for an enlightened conversation about our brain intelligence, our body intelligence, and our energy intelligence. And now, here's your host, Dr. Bart Rademacher.
Welcome, welcome all of you today. Very delighted to be introducing Dr. Eric Kroll and Wendy West, my producer. And before we talk about them, let me talk about this platform. This platform is Prescription for Your Transformation, hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations. It's that place where we get to share with you authentic conversations with people that are really delivering a very cool message, something that you really want to know about. It's really the stuff that you don't know that you don't know that's going to make a huge difference in your life. I'm very excited with all the people that I get to share on this platform. I'm doing this 5 days a week. Currently, you wouldn't know it, but I'm actually in the Bahamas. It's freaking cold over here, but it's because I'm in this amazing clinic where they really turn the coolers down and it's almost freezing. So, but the point of today is very, very dear to my heart, because medicine in general and healthcare in a global fashion is really very much in upside down, if you will. And not by anybody's specific fault, and we're not here to point any kind of fingers, but the truth is that we need to be doing a much better job. I've been very fortunate. I've trained over 17 years in the medical environment at some of the best institutions in the world and also in two different continents. And I've had the opportunity to see how things work in different places and when things do not work. But one thing that I've always been very passionate about my entire life, growing up since I was a little kid in Mexico, is the desire to help people. And we have to find the right ways to help the people. And the way it works today isn't really working. And so somebody who's truly has the same kind of mindset and vision as I do is Dr. Eric Kroll, my personal doctor, if I may admit that on this show. And why? Because this guy's exceptional, absolutely brilliant, very smart, knows his stuff, but his heart's in the right place. And he delivers a kind of medicine that, quite frankly, all of us really would want and deserve to have. Dr. Kroll, thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure, Bart. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. So we just had a little bit of fun just before the show because I wasn't sure we were going to be able to get you on because of some technical issues. And that's what I find always so much fun about this show, is simply because these things just simply happen.
But good luck, Joe, always helps.
Yeah, exactly. And then, yes. But let me have you introduce your concept of what kind of medicine that you bring to the table and how people can truly benefit from your approach, which I think by far is the best approach that anybody can really get these days.
Yeah, I practice a type of family medicine called direct primary care. And let me start by saying that I didn't invent the model. But I am an early adopter of it. And the direct primary care model basically works like a gym membership. You get all of your primary care for a low monthly fee, and it doesn't matter how often you use the doctor or whether you come in at all that month, you're just budgeting all of your primary care for one low monthly fee, which usually is anywhere from $50 a month to $70 a month. And basically, it started in 06 or 09, but it really started to gain steam after the Affordable Care Act in 2010, because now so many people have these high deductibles that they have coverage, but they don't have access to care because they either can't get in with their doctor or their doctor doesn't take their plan. So this concept of coverage without care is really what's ruining our healthcare system, because it doesn't help you to have an insurance policy. What you need to have better health, physical wellness, emotional wellness, optimum nutritional status, you have to have a doctor to whom you have access at any time, today, tomorrow, with whom you can see for an hour to go over your dietary patterns, your exercise patterns, your sleep patterns. You can't get well when the doctor can see you 3 weeks from now, and it'll be a 10-minute encounter.
You know, that's unfortunate. One of the challenges, and when I was in med school way back when, I'm not going to tell you how many years, you know, I already kind of saw this, you know, coming along, and where it was becoming more and more challenging. And why? Because it almost seemed like medicine was becoming much more institutionalized, in the sense that you had all sorts of organizations, whether it was insurance company or hospitals or government regulations, kind of determining, you know, how you as a physician needed to show up. And we first saw that in primary care, actually, and this is actually back in Holland. And it was a major challenge where people were deciding how you needed to practice medicine. And the person that really suffered the most, actually, I mean, the people that suffered the most were the patients as well as the primary care physician. But fortunately, you know, and with your concierge kind of approach, it's like you brought it back to the past, where now you are, in fact, what I love about this and the way that I've worked with you in the past, or at least try to, I'm not always a good patient, I guess, is, you know, we're partnering up in my health. It's not like, okay, you're dictating, you know, what I'm supposed to do. No, we're having a conversation, a smart conversation about, okay, what are the different things? And why? Because you're not rushing, you know, to see, you know, 20,000 patients in one day.
Right. Yeah. My patients are basically hiring me to be their advocate, to be their health coach, to help get them through the rest of the healthcare system in a simpler, more cost-effective way, a partner, an accountability partner. I mean, I would expect to see all my patients once a year and set goals for the year. And then we decide, what is our plan for achieving those goals? How often am I going to see you? I can see you every week or every 2 weeks, once a month, whatever it takes. But you have to have a plan for wellness that you're always working on and that you're accountable to somebody to make sure that you're achieving those goals. And if you're not, you need a new plan. But you're always working on a plan for wellness.
And what I like about that concept too, because, you know, and again, we think the same, you know, rather than talking about what we call quote unquote preventative care, you're talking wellness, which is a whole different mindset than what many people are looking at. And it's also an approach that's not what I would say reactionary to, you know, getting sick. So how do you explain, or how could you explain to our listeners your approach to wellness and why it's so different?
Well, the whole system, as you know, is based on taking care of people when they're sick. It's a wealth care system that just, you know, best place in the world to be if you have serious illness. But our system is not built to prevent chronic diseases. So the direct care model and having a doctor that you can see and spend time with, the whole approach is based on optimizing your nutrition and your lifestyle patterns. So preventative care is just focused on making sure you have this screening, that screening for cancer. But wellness-based care gets to the root of what it is that makes us healthy or cause disease. You know, making sure that we're following heart-healthy dietary patterns, making sure we have adequate micronutrients, you know, all the antioxidants we need to prevent cancer and just to function optimally, making sure that we exercise enough and in the right way. And the system just isn't built to ask people about those things. So the entire emphasis for a direct primary care doctor is to focus on that and to actually make their patients accountable for living that way. So
here's a question that come up in my head, and Wendy, just jump in anytime, because I know you're a health nut too, and you're going to be potentially our listener here,
okay,
with two doctors. And any questions you want to ask, is, assuming that you're that listener like everybody else is listening in on today, you know, what kind of questions you wouldn't want to ask. But I got a question from the perspective of, you know, who are your patients in a sense? Because you know, I'm very passionate about wellness. I even as a plastic surgeon, it's interesting because there are times when I would recommend to people, hey, look, I know I'm a plastic surgeon, and plastic surgeons, they typically operate, but let's see if we can do a non-surgical thing. And then sometimes I get the cross-eyed look, and people think I'm nuts. But the truth is that that wellness approach, that healthier approach, that preservation of the wellness and health and vitality and vibration of the body, I think is paramount to everything, to our entire existence. But I'm finding that so many people just are not really appreciative of the need to be well. So how is it that, you know, who comes to you? Let me ask the question differently. Who actually ends up coming to you? And are these patients that are really focused on wellness, or are these the patients that are kind of late in the game and having all these complaints? I mean, what are you finding?
The thing I love about that question is the model automatically self-selects for someone who is interested in putting the effort to be well, because they're taking the money out of their own pocket. They're not, it's not a third party that's paying for their care. So my patients tend to be much more engaged in wanting to do the things because they're spending the money themselves to do it. So, you know, when someone's using an insurance plan and they're coming in, they just need their prescription filled and they know that they have to see you. But when I see people, they're more automatically, they've selected themselves as being more interested in trying to get well. So, I mean, most of my patients have insurance, but they have high deductible plans and they realize that they don't have access to care. So they select me initially almost from a financial standpoint to help lower their costs. But from the first visit, they realize that it's an entirely different model, because from the very first visit, I'm asking them all the questions about their diet and how many servings of fruits and vegetables and, you know, how many minutes a week of exercise. So they get the idea quickly that they've signed up for a whole different type of practice, which is going to keep them well, but they're paying for it, so they're engaged.
I think that's very intriguing. I have a quick question. So you're the type of doctor with a system that you've created where people see you while they're still well before they get sick, and that prevents them from getting sick. Is that how that's working?
Absolutely. Awesome. Whatever chronic illnesses they already have, we take care of them. So for example, if they have asthma, we completely take care of it. So when they get a head cold, it's just a head cold. It doesn't go into an asthma attack. Or if they have a little bit of borderline blood sugar, I hate that term borderline, by the way, but the blood sugar is elevated, they're on their way to diabetes. Normally it would be, you know, try and lose a little weight and see you back in 6 months. But when you're on the verge of diabetes, we have to have an aggressive plan that starts now for what are we going to do to lose 10% of your body weight in the next 3 months and exercise. And it's not just here, think about doing this and try hard. It's a written plan, and it might be a phone conversation a week later. How are you doing with our plan? And a week later, it's come in the office so we can measure your weight and your waist circumference. So I'm not waiting to see someone when they're already sick. It's a plan with regular follow-up to make sure they're achieving the goals that we set.
And you hold your patients accountable.
Absolutely. That's what they're hiring me to do.
Nice.
And that's what I enjoy doing most. It's fun to prevent it, not to, you know, clean the arteries out when they're already clogged.
You see, I have this caller ID that blocks numbers. And so whenever Dr. Kral is checking up on me, I don't answer the phone. so I'm a lousy patient, actually.
You're so bad. Because,
yeah, I'm supposed to follow through with a couple of things with them. But this is what's interesting, because at the end of the day, it's almost like, and we see this in the wellness space as well, but it almost seems that the patients, for the most part, are kind of relegating the responsibility of their health to their doctors. And so they're not taking responsibility for their own health. And when things don't go well, then it's almost like they're blaming the doctors or the hospitals or the medications for not helping them. And so that's why I think you know, the kind of work that Dr. Kral does is so critical, because if more people understood what he did and what others like him do, and be responsible, make smart choices, including the nutrition, including the exercise, you know, our health expenditures would be a lot less. And quite frankly, if you're being self-responsible for yourself anyhow, guess what? You're going to be healthier and need less medication.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we're preaching to the choir, I guess, a little bit. But these are important things for your listeners to know. And, you know, we promised we weren't going to point any fingers, but really all this kind of happened because way back in the 50s, businesses started offering full benefits to their employees. And then it just became more and more, the more and more comprehensive the benefits were, the better employees you could get. And so we were never intended to use insurance for predictable things. You know, it's only supposed to be for something catastrophic. So for 50 years, insurance costs skyrocketed because people were filing claims for predictable care. And then, you know, of course, the HMOs led to higher costs because now no one knows what anything costs and no one cares because anyone's paying for it. And then with the Affordable Care Act and having to cover pre-existing conditions. So I mention that because we got into this mess ultimately by using insurance, health insurance, in a way that was never intended to be used. So our solution is to go all the way back and start using our insurance only for catastrophic care, and everybody should just pay for their primary care out of their monthly budget. And with a model like this, that's affordable, because, you know, the same cost as a cell phone data plan for all of your health care, as opposed to what many concierge docs do, where they're charging $1,500 or $2,500 a year. So that is the solution to the healthcare crisis ultimately, because then everybody can have their own personal accessible doctor and they have their insurance for catastrophe, but it costs a lot less.
You know, and what's interesting too is that, you know, or the challenge I should say, and this is what I see so often, is that with modern technology and all the distractions and all the obligations and also the challenges in families and relationships and job and everything else, you know, people don't spend enough time thinking about their future health. And as I like to put it, and I learned this from somebody else, by the way, they don't put any stock in looking into their future health history. And so they're not taking stock of what could happen in the future and taking the right, you know, preventative measures, if you will, using that term, you know, today. And in addition to that, you know, with in this whole sort of mindset that, hey, you're going to get old anyhow, so just deal with it. You know, you're going to have, you know, gastritis or, you know, regurg or colds or whatever, or headaches. You know, just get used to or joint pains, I should say. You know, just, you know, start taking medications over the counter and let the doctors take care of it. Let the medicines take care of it. Let the doctors take care of it. But at the end of the day, you know, you're hurting yourself by not doing the right things right now.
Yeah, along those lines, I like to use high blood pressure as an example there, because in a 10-minute appointment with someone with high blood pressure, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to recommend a medication. If you have an hour with someone in evaluating their blood pressure, you can focus on the sodium content of their food, and you can use, you mentioned technology, you can use simple apps that everyone has on their mobile devices now, which will track their sodium intake, and you can help teach someone the impact that the sodium in their food has on their blood pressure and help them get their blood pressure under control without using a prescription, but by modifying just simply the sodium content of their diet. And that's a lifelong, that's for life once you learn that. And so many of the medicines that people start taking when they're prescribed in that 10-minute visit then cause other side effects that they may not realize. And then they're taking meds to treat the side effects of the other meds, when all you had to do in the first place was spend some time educating someone about the importance of sodium and how to track it.
So I can't eat my pretzels anymore.
Well, they don't taste good without the salt, so I guess not.
I just don't like pretzels.
So I'd like to talk on several topics, and I also want to, you know, wrap it up at the end. We have plenty of time, by the way, on a specialty or topic that's very dear to you as well. But let's talk exercise for a moment. And, you know, I can only imagine that there are certain exercises, that routines that are great, and some others that actually could be rather dangerous, like boxing, for example. I don't think that's a very safe kind of exercise.
I'm going boxing as soon as your show is over and I'm done editing. I'm going boxing tonight and tomorrow. So no, everybody knows not to hit my moneymaker. We're good. It's not that bad. It's cardio, strength training.
So what kind of recommendations do you get, actually? And you recommend something like boxing, because I know this is one of Wendy's favorite things.
I love boxing. Wait, is boxing an okay exercise to do?
Well, it definitely fits the bill as cardiovascular fitness. It's a great exercise. I mean, ultimately, it has to be an exercise that you enjoy doing so that you'll actually do it. And you want it to be an exercise that doesn't, you know, predispose you to getting injured, because then spending 6 weeks on the injured reserve list, you know, that doesn't help your health either. So I'm not sure what kind of boxing you're doing. As long as it's not the kind that would predispose you to injuring yourself, then I think that's great. But it is important that it be an activity that someone enjoys, so they'll do it. And it's important to vary up different activities so you don't get bored doing the same thing. But we used to be very specific in saying you've got to do, you know, 4 days a week, 5 days a week. At this point, the standard guidelines, all Americans as a minimum need to do 150 minutes a week of a moderate intensity activity. So I would leave it that vague so that people can choose the activity that they enjoy. Walking at a pace of at least 3 miles per hour, that's a good brisk walk. And if you do that 150 minutes a week, that's outstanding. Cycling at a pace of at least 12 miles per hour, probably 14 or 16, but 150 minutes of that type of moderate activity. But that's just the cardio. Then you need to spend at least 2 days a week minimum doing something that would strengthen your muscles. So some people prefer to go to a gym and do weights. You can do an outstanding strengthening activity at home just using resistance bands. And you can hit all the major muscle groups just using resistance bands. So it doesn't have to be anything fancy. You don't have to have an expensive gym membership to do it. You can walk and do resistance bands at home. And then the third element is flexibility, of course. The third element of exercise, to avoid injury, and to just to promote general flexibility, you've got to be doing stretching, obviously, before each of these activities. So, a lot of the new things, you know, like CrossFit, you know, people who enjoy doing that, go for it. It's just that we do tend to spend a lot of time on some of these higher intensity things that really predispose to injury. So you have to be quite careful with some of the more high intensity things like that. But, yeah.
So a question, talking about injuries, you know, that's been, you know, some of my challenges over time as I am getting older and I start working out and then I get hurt, if you will. And then that kind of sort of limits me, you know, doing certain things. And then I get kind of unmotivated to kind of work out because the pain is something I don't want. And so in general terms, you know, what is it that you recommend to people when they're not getting out there? And let's forget the injuries for a moment in my case, but, you know, how do you advise people to make sure that they do get engaged? Because you're talking a lot of hours per week.
Right.
And I can imagine a lot of people find that too much.
Well, the main excuse I get a lot of times is I just don't have enough time. And, you know, that reminds me of my favorite euphemism. Not enough time is really a euphemism for not enough desire. So when somebody tells me they don't have the time, it's usually just don't put enough priority on it. I like to suggest stationary bicycling for those who they just can't get out, or they always seem to have an excuse or they're too busy, because you can check your emails for 30 minutes on a stationary bike, mm-hmm. or read a book or watch a movie. You know, there's a lot of chronic problems that people have with things like back pain and knee pain and hip pain that they can still exercise on a stationary bike. So the last resort for someone that I just can't seem to get involved like that, I'll try and really reason a bit and say, look, you know, you can do a lot of things while you're on a stationary bike, and just get started there, even if it's 5 or 10 minutes a day, and then build up from there. So that's one of my favorite recommendations for those that I'm having a hard time getting engaged and going out and doing something. Doesn't matter if it's too hot, too cold, or where you live, you can always spend 20, 30 minutes on a stationary bike.
I keep an elliptical in my bedroom, so in the morning, the first thing I see when I wake up is my elliptical staring at me. So you can't help but, okay, got to go to the elliptical. So I do that when I'm not boxing. Works pretty well.
I thought you were going to say I'd take a look at that and then I hit the snooze button.
No, no, I'm not a snooze button person. Once I'm up, I'm up. I'm like, okay, I got to go work out.
The elliptical is great too because it's weight bearing, mm-hmm. But it doesn't put a lot of strain on the low back and the knees. And so that is a good one also. But the weight bearing exercises really are important because another concept in wellness, and as you talk about people planning ahead for things that could happen down the line, a lot of healthy people actually outlive their bones. You know, they're so healthy and fit. They don't have chronic diseases, so they live a long time. But if they never paid proper attention to exercise, which strengthens their bones and tones their muscles, then they end up, you know, hunched over with osteoporosis. And there's nothing more sad than someone who's otherwise very healthy, but their quality of life is terrible because they didn't pay proper attention to their bone health and their muscle strength. And so maintaining that core strengthening of the muscles over time, that's what keeps us from getting wear and tear on our bones. Our skeleton is supported by our muscles. Mm-hmm. If our muscles are strong, literally every step we take, our muscles absorb that impact so that our bones don't have to. So these are critical things for everyone in their 30s, 40s, and 50s, not waiting until they get their first bone density test at 60 and find out they have osteoporosis. So again, things that you can talk to people about every year, once a year, no matter what their age is, when that's the focus of the care is wellness and not sickness.
So really what you're saying is that all people, including myself, who travels a lot and work long hours, and we really don't have any excuse because those tension bands, they can, you know, fit in anything. In fact, they can fit in your own pocket, and you can definitely use that. And the truth is that there's so many things out there with modern technology as well. And I love that commercial with the Peloton, where you have this bike and then you have some sort of trainers halfway across the world, you know, training. I mean, it's so easy today to get the exercise. And what's interesting too, and you know, I want to touch up on this and see your perspective of this as well, is this new classification of a disease that's out there called the sitting disease. And do you have thoughts on that?
Oh, I haven't heard about a formal diagnosis of sitting disease, but to me, it's always been the sedentary lifestyle, but it's all the same idea. I mean, that sugar and sedentary lifestyle are probably the root of the majority of the diseases that we have. You know, you use it or you lose it. You sit around and don't use your muscles, they deteriorate. So then you build up fat around the waistline because you don't have as much muscle mass to burn the calories. And then as you're building the fat around the waistline, you're getting more tired, probably some sleep apnea. Then it's even harder and harder. It's a downward spiral that it's hard to get out of.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I recently have learned, and this is what's exciting about things like what's called the Vary desk. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's that desk that you put on your desk, and you can actually elevate it so that you're not only sitting all the time, you can actually stand. And some of the research that I was doing is that, you know, after about 60 minutes, some of the enzymes in your blood vessels stop functioning if your muscles aren't working. That's what then causes that clot buildup. And so one of the suggestions is you've got to walk around for a couple minutes, stand up for a couple minutes every 60 minutes, because otherwise, if you don't, and if you keep the sedentary lifestyle, you know, behind a desk, behind a computer, behind a TV or whatever, remembering that you're also in the car for maybe hours on end, and what's going to happen is that's a risk for cardiovascular disease that some people even suggest it's even worse than smoking. So go figure. As much as we are smoking less in this world, maybe we're more at risk of cardiovascular disease because we're sitting so much.
Yeah, and that's part of why we changed the way we recommend exercise, so that it's not X number of days, it's minutes. It's cumulative minutes during the week. So it all adds up, it all counts. You know, parking farther away and walking, you know, don't ever go down. What is it? How do I tell people? You can take the elevator if it's more than 3 flights up or more than 6 flights down. You know, otherwise you're walking. So just do a cumulative 150 minutes a week, and standing, being able to stand at work, you know, I mean, keeping the blood flowing, those are all a lot better than sitting, for sure.
You know, it's interesting you say about the elevators, because when I went to med school back in Holland, you know, on all the elevators, we had the sign, you know, if you're going up one flight upwards, take the stairs, 2 flights down, take the stairs, don't take the elevator. But their mindset wasn't so much focused on health, but more on energy. And now, for example, in Holland, I'm not familiar with this, but all the trains in Holland are running on wind power. And so it's the only country in the world that trains are totally running on wind power. And by 2020 or 2025, you know, all cars in Holland will not be running on gasoline or diesel. It'll all be electricity. And so it's interesting, you know, how that works, because, you know, they're just being smart. They're being, you know, visionary, and we can be visionary about our own health. So switching to something else then, what about nutritionally? Because one thing that I've started to do, and I'm really enjoying this, is I'm doing my own juicing. I have these 2 juicers. I have a centrifugal juicer and a masticated juicer. And I'm also growing my sprouts. And wow, it's such a huge difference, and it tastes different. It's more fun. So what are some of the recommendations that you have when it comes to nutrition?
Well, nutrition is a huge can of worms, because, you know, there are very few experts in nutrition. There's a lot of theories in nutrition. And the problem with nutrition is that most people that are giving guidance in that area are selling something. You know, so it's really hard to get good, sound nutritional advice from professionals without feeling like, oh, this person's selling you something. So if we're going to talk about nutrition, you got to break it down into the core elements. When we talk nutrition, we're talking macronutrients and micronutrients. So the macronutrients are the fuels, the carbs, fat, and protein. So that would be a whole hour discussion in itself. What's the best way to get our macronutrition? Because what, you know, is it better to do low carb? Or, you know, that's a little bit more controversial. But micronutrients, which we're getting at with the juicing, we tend to be highly deficient in micronutrients, all the things that our body needs to function. You know, the vitamin A, D, and K, the B vitamins, vitamin C, all the things that fight the effects of stress on our body, the antioxidants, we have to have those to prevent getting cancer and, you know, to be optimally functioning. So we're all guilty of not getting enough fruits and vegetables, except for you, Bart, since you're juicing and growing your own sprouts. I mean, you're the exception to the rule there. But, you know, the minimum 5 servings a day of fruits and vegetables, hardly anybody gets that. So you almost have to do something, whether it's, you know, supplementing, juicing. A critical piece of nutrition that is probably the most commonly ignored.
Wow. You have a question, Wendy?
No, I'm learning a lot.
But the macronutrients, I mean, most people realize are that sugar is probably the root of most evil when it comes to medical problems. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of arguments about carbs. I mean, in general, we need carbohydrates for fuel. And a diet that is focused on getting 30 to 40% of all your calories from carbohydrates is a good thing, as long as it's the right kind of carbohydrates, the complex carbohydrates, not the simple carbs. You know, and 25% of calories from protein and the other 35% from fat. You know, we need fat, we need carbs. It needs to be the right kind of fat and the right kind of carbs. Having said that, there are all kinds of philosophies out there about the effect of wheat and grains. And in general, we look at grains as being healthy. But there's a whole new group of different diets, whether it's paleo or Whole30, where, you know, new ideas that the grains promote inflammation in the body and they promote the belly fat. You know, these are things that are hard to refute, and it's hard to tell any one person that there's one best way. So you really have to work with individuals on that and get their preferences. And there's no one size fits all when it comes to healthy diet as far as the macronutrients go. But the micronutrients, that's a lot easier. I mean, we all have to get more of the greens and the fruits and vegetables in general.
You know, one of the things that I discovered, and I totally agree with you, because it's very confusing. And in fact, I kind of started my journey many, many years ago, and really excited about all these different, you know, pills I could be taking. I mean, supplements I could be taking, not medications. But my challenge was that I was talking to so many different people, and they're all recommending different things. And I remember my most favorite one was Formula 2001. I thought, well, this is so cool. But the problem was that I felt I was bouncing off the walls, and it made me feel very uncomfortable. And I realized, you know what, I'm going to stop all this. And in my particular case, which I find very interesting, actually, is that I do have a hard time with supplements. In general, my body just seems to reject them. It doesn't like them. I guess the concentrations are super normal and perhaps not ideal for me. And so one thing that I did learn from all this was paying attention to your body, you know, being aware of how your body is responding. And so that's what I like to frame as body intelligence. And so after you have a certain kind of meal, and the best example I have is, and you didn't hear this, Dr. Kral, you know, when I drink Coca-Cola, you know, and then how I get
you don't drink fire. That, do you?
Sometimes I do, actually. But generally not. But in the past, I would drink it a lot more, and I couldn't figure out why 5 or 10 minutes later, I wasn't feeling good. I wasn't feeling well. And so when you begin to notice, you know, what is your body doing an hour after you have a meal, an hour after you eat something, or several hours, or do you wake up in the middle of the night, these kinds of things. And if you become much more aware of that and then make that connection, then you can actually make better choices. And so the truth is, I mean, you have the blood group diets, and you have the paleo diet, and you have this diet, and you have that diet. And like you said, a lot of people are either selling a book or a supplement or some food. The truth is that all of them probably work, but for different people. And so you just have to pay attention to what makes you feel the best. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that term body intelligence for that very reason. I mean, you can't tell anyone what is the best diet for them to follow, because it depends on their genetics. I mean, some people are more sensitive to wheat, so they have to stay away from that. Some people have a better tolerance for carbohydrate than others. So you have to individualize that. And there are some people that I'll recommend a diet that I would almost be embarrassed to even tell you about. I mean, the high-fat, low-carb, ketogenic lifestyle, it definitely has a place for some people. But people who follow that, they think it's the greatest thing, and everyone should follow a low-carb, high-fat lifestyle. That's not the case, but there are certainly people who are extremely sensitive to carbs, and the only way they can balance their hormones, balance the inflammation in their body, is to actually consume higher amounts of fat and keep carbs really low. But for most people, it really just does need to be a balance overall, with focus on the right kinds of carbs, low sugar for sure, and, you know, mostly the right kinds of fats. But yeah, you're right. I like that body intelligence. If it's okay with you, I'm going to use that.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
You got to trademark that.
It has to be visualized.
Well, actually, this whole platform that I talked about, I don't know if you heard of the intro, but it's a prescription for your transformation. Tap into your authentic genius. As Dr. Rademacher talks about your brain intelligence, your body intelligence, and your energy intelligence. And the reason I bring that up, mind you, is because, you know, I see the future doctor, right, not prescribing any medications and not performing surgeries. You know, unless you're a plastic surgeon and somebody wants breast augmentation, then of course then we have to do surgery. No, I'm just kidding. But just in general, I think that's what our future is. And part of it has to do with people like yourself who are into wellness, who are into optimizing the physiology of the body, using all the natural means that are out there. It's not just the nutrition, it's not just the exercise, but it's also lifestyle and everything else. But also having that partner like you, you know, guiding the patients, because we don't have all the answers. And that's sometimes where I get stuck. And even if it's motivational, even if it's, you know, helping someone stay accountable. And so that's why I think, you know, your job is so critical, and why I hope that many people listening today, you know, will be able to find you, and we'll certainly put a link on Facebook or add that link later on so people can find you. And or even, you know, in their own neighborhood, you know, find a concierge doctor, direct, you know, personal care doctor, because it really makes a huge difference.
It does. And, you know, money talks for people. You know, people are always concerned about lowering their healthcare expenses. And no matter where your listeners are, you know, they can go to, I think it's dpcare.org. It's a coalition that basically tells where all the direct patient care doctors in the country are. And utilizing the services of a direct care doctor, not just to be healthy and well, but, you know, it changes everything, because then you can, you know, change how you get your catastrophic insurance and lower your total costs. So, but it's not about the savings. It's having an accountability partner to keep you well, for sure.
The one other area that I like to go through, and because I know this is an area that you like to specialize in as well, but that's our cardiac health and some of the things that you do to make sure, because, you know, it is important for us to be able to monitor or diagnose, you know, certain developments in our body that could be indicators to future problems. And so what is your approach when it comes to that, and what is it that you'd like to share?
Oh, yeah, near and dear to my heart, for sure. A really thorough family history is the place to start, because we don't normally look at cousins and aunts and uncles, but going and looking at detail in the family history, if there is a tendency for men in the family, even further back, grandparents or aunts and uncles, men before the age of 55 or women before the age of 65, if that tendency runs in the family, then there has to be a pretty early intervention to look at the genetic profile. Because we have the ability for any person, for a test that costs as little as $40 in some cases, to check for all the genes that predispose to early heart disease. So we can tell if your cholesterol particles are big and fluffy or extra tiny and small or sticky. The point is, knowing your cholesterol is important, but it's only one piece of the puzzle. And millions of people in this country take medicines for their cholesterol that they don't need. Millions of people need them. I'm not an anti-statin, but they're not being prescribed in the right people. So the approach to preventing heart disease, other than making sure that there's heart healthy habits, is looking at all of the risk factors, the most important one being cholesterol, but not the number, looking at the makeup of it. So we all want big, fluffy cholesterol particles, because then even if you have a cholesterol of 300, if your particles are big and fluffy, they can't squeeze into the artery walls and form plaque. And likewise, the marathon runner with perfect cholesterol numbers all his life or her life, cholesterol of 150, and then drops dead at 45, because they had it in the family genetically, and they have such tiny particles that even though there was only a small amount in their blood, it was making its way into the artery walls and forming plaque. So without diverting too much into, you know, the paranoia of the pharmaceutical industry, this is one area where the influence of the pharmaceutical industry really, really harmed this country by putting the emphasis on, you know, getting everybody on cholesterol medicine and not really looking at the particles, big or small, just giving them drugs to get their cholesterol down. So that my approach is using genetics for clues, but and focusing on heart healthy habits. But when it comes to abnormalities in cholesterol, looking at those in terms of the size and stickiness of the particles, not how much cholesterol you have in your blood.
You know, it's also interesting, and I just recently was reading a book by Bruce Lipton, which is The Biology of Belief. And he's one of these scientists, if you will, who was who has done some of the original work on stem cells and understanding how cells actually work. And it's interesting because this whole concept of genes, and I know you understand this to the fullest degree, but most people listening in probably do not, because most people have this concept or this wild concept that, you know what, if you have a bad gene, then you're doomed for life. And the truth is that only 3% of genetic dispositions are really causing major disease problems. So more than likely, any kind of condition that you have is really not necessarily or purely genetic. In the world of genes, the gene is just information. It's just a blueprint. What happens is that it's the study of epigenetics, the study of the environment around the genes that determine how these genes get expressed. And so you're right about the needing to know what your genetic makeup is, so that you can modify the environment around the genes to function differently. And so for the listeners more specifically, you know, we have in the neighborhood of 22,000 genes. And it's fascinating to know that our genetic makeup is really no different from monkeys or other kinds of insects, but the way that we express ourselves as human beings is so different. And that's because the genes have what they call switches. They switch them on, switch them off. And I think there's about 2 million switches that switch things on and switch things off. And so really we can blame our fathers or parents or grandparents for our diseases today, because depending on what their lifestyle was, you know, some of those genes were switched on and switched off and were given to us. And so we have the opportunity together with, you know, individuals, doctors, amazing doctors like Dr. Kroll, who change the expression of our genes and therefore our entire human experience. And as you like the term, you tap into our body intelligence and have a smart body.
Couldn't agree more. And just as an example that maybe your listeners could relate to, you know, one of the genes I'm most familiar with, the APOE gene, which is implicated in Alzheimer's disease, but also determines how our body processes the fats in our diet. So knowing the type of gene you have helps decide whether your diet should be a little higher in fat or a little lower in fat. It determines whether fish oil is good for you. Fish oil might make your cholesterol worse or it might make it better depending on which type of that gene you have. Whether alcohol is in moderation is beneficial for you, or whether it's harmful by raising your triglycerides. So that's a genetic blueprint, but knowing what that is allows you to optimize the way you live your life in order to stay healthy. So, and you mentioned the future of medicine as the Human Genome Project gets understood more and more. You know, we're going to know what many more of these genes do. That will give us the information to then give better recommendations on exactly what healthy habits should be followed. And then with physicians like direct care physicians, not only giving you that advice, but actually checking in on you weekly, monthly, or otherwise to make sure you're following that advice.
Yeah, that's terrific. And so what are some of the tests that people could do?
Oh, well, the ApoE gene, it's part, if you get an advanced cholesterol panel looking at your particle size and everything, you can get that with the ApoE genotype. So you either have E22, 23, 24, there's only 9 different types that you could have there. And that determines, number one, it determines Alzheimer's risk as well, which I don't necessarily like to go into that because you can't, the way we know now, you can't really change your fate necessarily when it comes to Alzheimer's. So, but that same gene determines how the body processes cholesterol and the effect that fat and fish and alcohol has on cardiac risk.
So not that we're promoting anything in particular, but you know, what do you have any particular thoughts? And you don't have to share if you don't want to, but the 23andMe, I think, you know, that's one of those studies that helps with the genetic makeup.
Yeah, I chuckle to myself every time I hear that commercial because of the examples that they give. I mean, those are things that are interesting to know about, but I think any test is useless unless you're going to use the results to make positive changes. And I must admit, I don't know all of the genetic questions that that answers. You know, some of them are fun to talk about at cocktail parties, but I'm sure some of those genes actually give information that that would positively impact the decisions you make, you know, to be healthier.
Well, I think I'll be coming in and visiting you soon enough and, you know, do some more advanced wellness work and maybe look at some of those genes. And but I'm already going to let you know that there are certain things that I'm not going to give up. I won't disclose what
those are.
Wait
a minute. Today. You're not going to tell us what they are?
No, of course not.
Oh, come on.
There has to be a little bit of a mystery around me. You
know? Maybe when Wendy gives up boxing, you can give those things up.
Yeah, there you go. But she's never going to give that up, so.
Okay.
I can't give it up. I love it too much.
Well, maybe there's a gene which would tell you if boxing is harmful for you or beneficial.
See? Well, just as long as I keep sparring with the coach, I don't get hit. We're good.
All right.
Get it. Save the moneymaker.
Unless you're doing a horror movie, you know, and you like those anyhow.
Yeah, but that's all, you know, prosthetics.
All right. There you go. So just in 30 seconds, Dr. Kral, things of brilliance that you like to share with the listeners moving forward.
About 30 seconds, shades of brilliance. I believe that every healthcare is a right, and every person has a right to have not only coverage, but access to their own personal physician who knows them, knows their history, knows what they're at risk for, and can take care of them quickly when they're sick, and focus on doing all the things that need to be done to keep them well. Everybody deserves that. And as this kind of direct model grows and more doctors do it, my hope is that everybody will have access to a physician like that.
That's awesome. Well, I really want to thank you for today, and Wendy, of course, you as well, for, you know, being a delightful producer and making things happen. Dr. Kral, thank you. This is absolutely brilliant. This is one of my favorite shows now, because I get to hear all these incredible things and I've learned so much for today. And most importantly, you know, I get to share this brilliant information with the rest of the world. And anybody listening in, you know, reach out to Dr. Kral or for any more information, love to support you. I know you and I will be talking more in the future, more specific topics on Facebook Live, because that's where we can get to share some authentic information and have some real interactions with people in the future. So I'm Dr. Bart Rademacher, prescription for your transformation, hashtag real people, hashtag real conversation, broadcasting myself live from the Bahamas where I'm doing some stem cell surgeries, Dr. Kral in the Tampa area, and Wendy, of course, in sweet Arizona.
Woo.
So thank you, and I'll be back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Join Dr. Bart Rademacher live right here on Radio Star Worldwide each week or on demand 24/7.